Irva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from this and other NPR stations, and from Robin and Murray Sinclair, helping sustain NPR's coverage of the global economy.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future environment. It is part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information online at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910. WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. My name is Celeste Quinn, and our guest this afternoon in this portion of the program is licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you have questions, give us a call and talk to Susan. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free line, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She works with clients of all ages and athletes on enhancing health, fitness, and sports performance. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's also the consulting sports dietitian for Illini Athletics, and she leads nutrition and cooking classes at the new Division of Campus Recreation ARC building on the Champaign-Urbana campus of the U of I. A member of the American Dietetic Association and the American College of Sports Medicine, she's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, the publisher Coach's Choice. You'll find Susan on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net and at www.rkteamnutrition.net. Questions about diet and nutrition? Join us with a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Good afternoon. Welcome. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, Celeste.
On this chilly but sunny.
It is a little deceiving. It looks a little bit warmer than it is.
Yeah, well, we're on our way towards spring, for
That's
sure.
Right.
Let's take our call now. We already have a listener ready to join us. Calling in this afternoon from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. I have a couple of questions on diet and kidney stones. The first one is relating to possible vitamin D toxicity. I'm wondering, what is the upper limit in safety for taking vitamin D as a supplement?
Well, there's a lot of information coming out on vitamin D. I guess the first thing I would suggest, there may be a big range of what you can take based upon what your levels are. So in other words, the first step with vitamin D really appears to be getting your levels tested. I don't know if you have done that yet. But that would be number one, because, you know, we're recommending sort of the upper level of 1,000 IUs, but that is not anywhere near enough if your D levels are low. It's one of those vitamins that you really don't want to take extra if your D levels are normal, because there'd be no real reason probably to take large amounts. And so I guess that'd be the first thing, is to say, well, in terms of the amount that you would need, get your D levels checked. If they are low, which being from Milwaukee and even north of us, there certainly is a chance that they're low. But I would check that first. And then what seems to be happening is that individual doses are being prescribed by physicians really based on those levels. And so, you know, I've had clients taking 10 times the amount of the recommended amount and 50 times and even 100 times, depending upon what their levels are. But because it's a fat-soluble vitamin, you really don't want to take more unless you really need it. So I guess that'd be, you know, the upper level really depends on whether someone's stores are full or not in the body.
Okay. I've been put on a low oxalate diet, and I'm wondering, I didn't have a chance to follow up with anyone on the downside of a low oxalate diet. For example, it seems that some of the most nutritious foods are the ones that are high oxalate, and I'm wondering if I might wind up with a vitamin deficiency in general from sticking to the foods on low oxalate.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me the things on the list that you really have cut down on or cut out on, because some of the things we know, greens
and things
like that.
Well, I don't have a list in front of me, but for example, sweet potatoes, mm-hmm. almost all dark greens
right.
are high oxalate, and those are things that I was eating a lot of, and now I have to cut out not 100%, but almost entirely.
Yeah. The, you know, the typical things like that, like the particularly the green veggies people worry about because those dark leafy greens are high in a ton of nutrients. But on the other side, you can think that even if you have a half cup of spinach, for example, that is a really great source of vitamin A or beta carotene. It's a great source of iron and other things as well, and antioxidants. So you don't need a whole lot of that to get a good benefit from it. In other words, it probably would be pretty rare to actually have a deficiency on a diet that is low oxalate as long as you're eating a little bit of the veggies that you're kind of cutting down on.
Uh-huh.
And that way you'll be in pretty good shape. Some of the different foods, some of the fruits that you can handle are also high in some of these other nutrients. So what I would do, a couple things that you could do. It would be worth tracking what you eat for, I would give it at least 3 days. And then you can use, if you get online, you can use some of the online nutrition tools to actually run a nutrition analysis yourself.
Hmm.
And then you can pull that up and say, gosh, how am I doing in terms of the nutrients? And an easy one that I like to use is one that was developed here at the University of Illinois. And it's called NAT, or Nutrition Analysis Tool. And that is you can get to it through www.nat.uiuc. .edu.
Okay.
Or you could Google nutrition analysis tool altogether, and that will pull it up. And you can actually put in your age and your gender and go ahead and put in what you've eaten, and you can do several days on there. And that will show you how you're doing in terms of percentages. And so when you track, go ahead and track as close as you can to the amounts of food and what they are, and then just put in the full day and track a couple days there and see how you're doing. And obviously, it would be maybe helpful to go in and meet with a registered dietitian, too, to get a sense to see, gosh, if there are things that you can maybe change around or other foods you might want to eat more of if you find that you're low in certain things. But that's a good place to start.
That sounds great. I just have one last question. It's recommended to reduce the amount of, not necessarily reduce the amount of alcohol, just not have a lot of mm-hmm. alcohol, although it says distilled alcohol is better than other things. What would the relationship between alcohol consumption, distilled alcohol specifically, and kidney stones be?
Well, I don't know that I know the answer exactly, but what I can tell you about alcohol is that alcohol intake can affect absorption of minerals. And so, for example, if you do drink much alcohol, that can affect iron absorption and that can affect calcium absorption. And so in terms of oxalates, which are, you know, the big issue is, are they being utilized in the body and are they being stored, and could that cause a problem with, formation of the kidney stones? There's probably something going on where alcohol, if you take it with some of these foods, it might enhance the use of that oxalate in the body. But physiologically, I'm not sure exactly what happens, but that's a general guideline we have, is to watch your alcohol intake too. And when alcohol is processed different ways, certainly biochemically it has different formulations. So I think distilled alcohol may not be as big of a problem just because of the processing.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Other questions for Susan Kundrat are invited. 333-9455. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free, 800-222-9455. What are oxalates?
Well, oxalates are components in foods that can bind with other things. So, for example, you know, he was talking about oxalates and affecting kidney stones. We often think of oxalates and things like greens, again, dark leafy greens, and how they may inhibit the absorption of the iron from those foods mm-hmm. because they actually bind with some of the nutrients in there. And so there's something that isn't necessarily good in the food, and it may decrease absorption of nutrients like calcium and iron and some of these other things. And so, you know, there's some thought that also can play a role in the formation of the kidney stones.
Yeah. So in a situation like that, like his, what kind of advice is the kind of general advice do people get for substituting foods for what you're taking out of the diet, mm-hmm. especially if you're somebody who, like this fellow, seems to really enjoy his vegetables?
Yeah. Right. Well, that the first step, like I mentioned, I think, is to actually do an analysis and find out what's low.
Mm-hmm.
Because it may be that he's getting, like I say, even a little bit of certain things is enough, you know, in combination mm-hmm. with other fruits that are okay, that he might be fine nutritionally. But we often think, yes, gosh, I'm told to eat all these dark leafy greens and all these antioxidants. And so what might happen is that people drop those out. And like you say, if they don't add other fruits or other vegetables, then they might be missing out on the big picture. But usually there are other foods that are either low enough in oxalates or other fruits to add that can balance it out fine. But that, you know, that's a concern. Another concern people often have is if they're on Coumadin or if they're on warfarin or some of the blood thinners, because you have to really watch the amount of some of these greens and other foods that are high in vitamin K. And so it runs into a similar type problem, is you want to make sure that you're still eating those foods.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, generally what we recommend now is not necessarily to drop down all the leafy greens and foods high in vitamin K, but sort of keep that consistent. And then you can monitor the medication as long as your diet is fairly consistent. So you just don't want to one day eat a ton, another week not mm-hmm. eat much, and then it becomes very difficult to monitor that medication. But that's where the recommendations have really changed, so that people can eat really healthy, and then you just sort of monitor the medication a little bit better.
Okay. And does it matter if you're taking a multivitamin daily?
Yeah, a
multivitamin. That's something to consider as well?
Yeah, in some cases that can be a factor. With the vitamin K, for example, it is a factor. There's not vitamin K in every multi, but that would be something you really wouldn't want 100% vitamin K in your multivitamin if you're on a blood thinner. And as far as the oxalates, that's more naturally found in the food, so usually that's not a problem, taking a multivitamin.
Okay. Well, March is National Nutrition Month, so happy National Nutrition Month.
Thank you.
And this is sponsored by the American Dietetic Association, and you are a member of mm-hmm. that organization. And this year the theme is Eat Right. So
it's a nice theme, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a very good one. And you brought along like a little checklist.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we could review that since we don't have any callers at the moment.
Great.
Take us through it.
Okay. Well, one thing that I think is really important to do as far as nutrition is really look at a practical sense of what we're doing every day. Because, again, we read all these things and hear these things, and it's very interesting. And a lot of my clients tell me, gosh, they've read every cookbook, and they can tell me the exact nutrients in 1,000 foods, but they don't really eat well. So it is all about what we actually put into our mouths on a daily basis. That's the bottom line. And so I have a checklist of top 10 things. So listeners can actually jot down, do they do this or do they not do this? Because I think these are the things that really gets to the core of eating well. So when we look at that, you know, the first one I have here is grocery shop weekly, so you're well stocked with high quality foods. If we don't get foods around us that help us eat healthy, it's very difficult to eat well. And so I hear that a lot from my college students and clients that say, gosh, I would really do well, but I don't have anything left in my fridge. Sometimes we just don't have the money to get the food. So budgeting and using coupons and using the cards at different places where you can save money is also really helpful, because it allows us to get more quality food. But I think weekly grocery shopping is nearly essential for most people, because that way you can still get all your produce and extra milk if you need it, and you don't run out of anything. So I think that's number one. The second one, plan meals ahead of time so you're sure to eat well-balanced. Anytime we can plan even 3 or 4 meals during the week, mm-hmm. that's helpful, because then you know that you're going to have some good meals that you can draw on for other foods. The third one is eating a good breakfast every day. We all know that's important. And three things I look for in a good breakfast: a whole grain, so whole wheat cereal, whole grain cereal, a fruit and some type of protein source. So maybe that is yogurt, or maybe that's milk on your cereal, or maybe that's scrambled eggs, or some type of protein in the morning, which I think a lot of people miss. The next one relates to protein as well. Eat 20 to 30 grams of protein at every meal. You know, about 25 grams of protein is about 3 ounces or a deck of cards worth of, let's say, chicken breast. And if people are not getting that protein in, they often feel hungry very quickly as well. If watching your weight, eat double the veggie servings compared to grains at meals. That's very easy. So in other words, if you're going out, you might not want the big plate of pasta, but you might want, the chicken breast and a side of pasta and a big salad and side of veggies. So that if you're really trying to eat balance, you have to think, whatever I eat in my grain or potato or rice or pasta, maybe I'm going to double in my veggies. Of course, if somebody's trying to gain weight, they might go the other way around. Eating at least 2 cups of fruit and 3 cups of veggies a day. That's another thing that's important, and people can just track that. We don't really have to worry about servings as much as we want to track. Just are you eating a couple cups of each at least, and hopefully more of your veggies. Next one, eating at least 3 high-calcium foods or food sources a day. That might be milk, yogurt, cheese, soy milk, calcium-fortified orange juice. 3 is really a minimum for most of us, and trying to get that calcium in is really important. I continue to have clients I work with who are very low in calcium. They think they're doing well because they might have milk on their cereal and some other cheese some other time during the day. It's not nearly enough. And with calcium being low, we don't think about it as much. But as we get older and we worry more about osteoporosis or osteopenia, then we really start thinking about it more. But we need to get on it early. The next one is one that you don't often see, but use onions, garlic, and spices liberally to boost flavor and antioxidants. Really use those foods because they are high in key nutrients, they're high in natural nutrients, and we're learning more all the time about different spices and their benefits. The 9th one, keep fried foods to a minimum, and we always get there, what does a minimum mean? To me, a minimum means probably once a week. So if you have French fries once a week or you have something fried once a week, that's probably reasonable for most people, but you really don't need it more than that. And lastly, eat 2 to 3 servings of good fats a day. Fatty fish, nuts, seeds, avocados, flax, olive oil. And so don't be afraid to eat the good fats. Don't be afraid to add some of these things in because they're very helpful for us. It's part of the whole Mediterranean type of eating. And we know that these fats can be very helpful for a lot of reasons, decreasing inflammation, helping with heart disease risk reduction, and so on.
Okay, very good. There you have it. Well, let's go back to the phones now.
Okay.
We've got some phone callers calling in to talk with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Let's go first to a listener on line 1. Cell phone, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question about, it's a pot belly. I'm 5'11", and I weigh about 200 pounds, and all of my extra weight, like 100% of it, is in my stomach. I have a degenerative bone disease, which prevents me from running or walking any distance. So I've gotten an exercise bike that I use, and I lift weights. But it doesn't, I mean, I've been using the bike and lifting weights for months, and if I flex my stomach muscles, it feels like everything in my stomach is muscle. Mm-hmm. And yet it's a pot belly. And I just wonder if there are ways to deal with that, that I'm not thinking of, because I have a relatively good diet. I exercise on the bike as much as I can, and I don't eat huge quantities of food. I don't eat a lot of calories a day, but all of this weight is here. But like I say, like my stomach feels like it's all muscle, but it's just sticking out there. So if you have any info for that, I would love to hear it, and I'll listen on the radio.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Okay. Well, what you're talking about is not that uncommon, I will say. First of all, I would say it's most important that you're fit. So congratulations on the work you're doing on your exercise, because that decreases your risk of disease no matter how much weight you're carrying, because you're exercising, you're staying fit. So that's number one. That's great. Secondly, I would say just to take a look at how much you're doing exercise-wise. Most of the data that we have on actual weight loss, people who've lost weight and kept it off from the National Weight Control Registry, really indicates that most people, when they're trying to lose, need to be active 60 or more minutes a day. For many people, it ends up being 120 minutes or 2 hours a day. That's a lot of time. But 60 minutes a day really is kind of a minimum for exercise if you're trying to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And to work up to that, of course, not everybody, if they're just starting, should do that. But if you're already exercising, you might want to consider, can you go longer? Can you go a little more often? Can you add some type of cross-training type thing like swimming that wouldn't be jarring to you, or elliptical, or anything different where you can work your body in a different way? And make sure that you're just getting enough in. You might find that many people see a little bit more weight loss when they add a 15 or 20 minute even slow walk, if you can do that in the morning, just because you're moving your body at different times during the day besides just your one exercise period. So those would be things, and certainly working with a certified exercise physiologist or personal trainer would be maybe beneficial too, to maximize your workouts. From a nutrition standpoint, the other thing I would say is really it's about calories in versus calories out. That's number one. And so I would, if I were you, I would start tracking what you eat. I talked earlier about doing an online nutrition assessment or working with a registered dietitian to do that. Because sometimes we're eating things we don't think we're eating, or maybe the amounts are different. And even if you're eating well, you might be eating more than you need when you're trying to lose weight. So I would start tracking what you're taking in. I would also consider maybe making sure that you're eating enough early in the day. Sometimes we don't eat that much early in the day. We eat more later. We call these bottom-heavy diets. And there's some data to indicate it might be harder to lose weight if we're eating a lot more later in the day, a lot more at night and later on. So if there are ways you can shift any of your energy earlier in the day, mm-hmm. that might be beneficial as well, to take a look at that. And then the other thing I would suggest is, we talked a bit about these fruits and vegetables and things, and you might want to consider trying to make sure that you're, at your body weight, you could, with exercise, you could probably eat 120, 130, 140 grams of protein a day. So even with that, you might say, gosh, am I eating about 40 in the morning, 40 around lunch, 40 at night in terms of amount of protein? That's about what looks to be, 4 or 5 ounces of protein in terms of meat, and making sure that you're getting more fruits and vegetables. Even if you just up your fruits and vegetables and divide your protein out, that might drop out some other calories just because you're eating more produce. And that might help you lose some weight there. So those might be suggestions that you could try, and really think about, are you truly getting at least your 60 minutes of an active body a day to make sure you're burning enough calories?
Okay, and again, that website that Susan mentioned earlier, that's for the nutrition assessment tool, which is at the University of Illinois. So it's www.nat.uiuc.edu, NAT, www.NAT, and then UIUC, remember that, it's University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.edu. And also you could put into your browser, you could Google or Yahoo National Nutrition Assessment Tool, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or Nutrition Analysis Tool.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Analysis. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks. Let's take another call now. Listener in Urbana, line 2. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
My question, I'm a vegan, so I eat a lot of soy products in my early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And can you explain what the connection between estrogen and soy, and if I need to be concerned about that since I eat so much?
Mm-hmm. Well, soy is a food that has some natural phytoestrogens in it. And so it's different than the estrogen we naturally would have in our body, particularly women have more in the body. It's different than taking estrogen and type of supplement or something like that, or a type of medication. But they do have small, very small amounts of natural estrogens. And so there has been some, concern if you eat a lot of soy. Two things you want to think about. The first thing would be typical soy intake for males and females that we have data on from typical Asian intake, I would say, is maybe 25 to 30 grams a day of soy protein. And when those soy foods are more natural soy foods, things like tofu and miso and tempeh and soy milk and things like that, we really, from what I understand, we really don't have data to show any problems, saying like, gosh, is that many too much natural estrogens, or could that cause any problems in males, or could that cause estrogen-positive tumors in females and things like that. If they're natural amounts, natural type foods, then that would be probably 2 or 3 servings a day of soy food is what that ends up being. And that I wouldn't worry about. If you are taking in, as a vegan, extra soy powders and a lot of soy bars and foods that aren't necessarily natural soy foods, then you may want to cut back. You may want to find some other protein sources, just because we know less about those types of products. And there certainly has been some studies where they've looked at natural soy foods versus soy foods that are more formulated soy foods or powders or things like that. And if there's anything that comes out of there, it's probably saying, gosh, to be more careful, let's go back to maybe the natural soy foods. So there's probably no reason on a vegan diet that you would need more than 25 or 30 grams of your protein from soy anyway, because you could probably easily get other, you know, high protein foods themselves that are vegan that could be another 30 or 40 grams, and you're going to get some in grains and vegetables and other things too. So I guess the bottom line would be I wouldn't be concerned if you're choosing mostly natural soy foods and you're getting two or three servings a day. And that probably is as much as you really would need to take in if you're eating a really good balanced vegan diet.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, it is mostly soy milk and tofu, but I didn't know if the combination was a problem, but that's great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Other questions for Susan Kundrat are invited this afternoon. 333-9455, that's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. We also have a toll-free number, 800-222-9455. No one is waiting at the moment on the line. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. She is the consulting sports dietitian for Illini Athletics and leads nutrition and cooking classes at the new Division of Campus Recreation ARC building on the Champaign-Urbana campus of the University of Illinois. So what's new at ARC these days?
Well, we've got some neat things coming up. Some of my student interns are here listening today, and they've been helping me with some programs over there at the ARC. We've got a program tomorrow, actually. One thing I've started is a cookbook club. And so we're reviewing a different cookbook the first Tuesday of every month at 12:15. It's free and open to anyone. And we're looking at, foods that may be typical that college students would eat, but also just really easy, fast, healthy cookbooks. And so, that's one thing we've got going tomorrow at 12:15. We've also got Wellness Wednesday programs that we run nutrition programs every now and then that my students take the lead on those. And we've got one, Pasta Three Ways, that's going to be Wednesday night. And which is a really good program because looking at just making whole wheat pasta and then what do you do with all that pasta and how to make a pasta salad or quick, easy pasta dishes. And so that's going to be coming up, too, on Wednesdays. And so the Campus Recreation website, on that website, you can get the listing and the rundown of what's going on. So the other thing that people can do if they're interested and they want to contact Campus Recreation, maybe if they have a group. Let's say you've got a group of 10 people, or maybe you've just got 8 friends and you want to get together and you would like to have a cooking class on a particular topic. Campus Recreation is taking requests for those classes and then setting them up either through Stacy Krozik, who's another dietitian on campus who's doing some of the classes, or myself. And Stacy also has student dietitians who are helping her as well. And so that's working out well because we might be getting requests and then we'll try to fill those requests for particular classes. So we've got those going on, and then I've been running a number of cooking classes for the athletes on campus, and so that's been fun, too. We may have 20 at a time at 6 and then at 7 or at 7 and then at 8, and they come in, and my students help me with all that, and we have stations set up, and so the athletes come in, and they have groups of 3 or 4, and they're all making at least one dish, and then we come together at the end of the class, and everybody tries everything. And so there's no question that getting into a kitchen, the kitchen over at the ARC is really a neat setup. And when people get in and cook and have fun and, you know, make new things, they're just more apt to eat well. I got an email from one of our athletes the other day, and he had come to one of the classes, and one thing we made was a big French bread pizza, which works out well because you can make quite a bit of it. Then you can refrigerate it or freeze it and bring it out. And he had been to class a couple weeks earlier, and he emailed he said, just to let you know, I've made this 4 times in the last 2 weeks. So I guess he liked that recipe, so that worked out well.
Let's talk with some more callers now. A listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling. I have a daughter who's 11, and she's quite athletic. And she's been having a problem with when she's been running or she plays soccer, she gets really dizzy and fatigued. And I took her to the doctor, and they said, you need to map out what she's eating. She's, you know, I think they said hypoglycemia, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So we mapped out what she's been eating, and I was appalled. I thought we really ate well, but she was getting almost no protein.
Mm-hmm.
So I've really been boosting her protein, and it's worked wonders.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't really know how much. You know, she probably weighs 80, 85 pounds. Any advice for what a really active preteen kid should be eating as far as levels of protein? I also found out we were eating way too much pasta and carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of vegetables and fruits, but, again, almost no protein.
Mm-hmm. Well, two things with her. When she's as active as it sounds like she is and she's still growing, her protein needs are higher. And although we have limited data on young athletes, we do think that they can probably utilize up to a gram of protein per pound when they're really active and growing. So that would be, in her case, maybe 80 grams of protein a day. She certainly might utilize more, and if she's got extra, she may just burn that for calories. But, you know, when you look at that, one thing you could think about doing is I've talked some about dividing these protein into three, you know, at least three different eating occasions. So, for example, if there are ways you can increase your protein in the morning, that would be really helpful. And then make sure when she has snacks and meals that there is some type of protein there. So, for example, you know, if she does like scrambled eggs, you could add those in the morning. You could add a yogurt. You could add a couple cheese sticks or something like that. And if she takes her lunch, then you really want to make sure maybe you increase the amount of turkey on a sandwich or things like that, simple things that whatever she is eating protein-wise, maybe increase that a bit. The other thing to really keep in mind if she's having, you know, with this dizziness and fatigue is that she should make sure, obviously, that an hour or so or half an hour before she works out or she has practice that she's taking in a snack with both carbs and protein. We often think about the carbohydrates, but if blood sugars tend to get a little bit low, she needs some of that protein. What that does is it makes everything get digested a little more slowly, so you get energy over a longer period of time. And it also may benefit to have what we call these low glycemic index carbs before exercise. And another good example of that is something like a cheese stick or yogurt that has some protein, and it also has carbohydrates that are digested slowly. Oatmeal is another one that's digested a little bit more slowly. So that may be helpful, even a peanut butter sandwich, because once you get protein and fat with the peanut butter on bread, then it slows down the absorption of that carbohydrate. So those might be things to think of pre. And then many athletes I work with, if they have a little trouble with hypoglycemia, do well having something like a sport drink or just getting some carbohydrate source during exercise, because it may be that she's just burning it faster and she runs out. And so having something like that, or having bits of a bar or, you know, something like that during exercise may be beneficial for her. The other thing to think about is that we're finding a lot more young athletes are in what we call energy drain, where they're just eating less than they need on a consistent basis. Not only can that make them fatigued or dizzy, but we also know that they don't probably form bones as well. And so this is an age where she's obviously, if she gets enough nutrition, she can form strong bones. She can make sure she's growing properly. And so we're seeing more and more athletes who, you know, get to 17 and 18 and haven't fully done that because they just have been exercising so much they can't keep up with the calories. And so that's something to consider. Certainly it may be, you know, your case may be beneficial to really work with a sports dietitian, because there are probably a lot of ins and outs that could be helpful with getting a set plan and making sure she's getting everything she needs.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana on line two. Hello.
Hi, Susan. I was listening earlier for your top 10 checklist,
mm-hmm.
and only got 9. Could you quickly run through the 10 one more time, or is it on your website or something?
We can put it on the website.
Yeah, we can also send you a copy if you'd like.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
Shall I run through them quickly or no?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'll just run through them very quickly. First one is grocery shopping weekly, planning meals ahead of time, eating a good breakfast every day, eating 20 to 30 grams of protein at a meal. If watching your weight, eating double the veggies as grains.
Okay.
Eat at least 2 cups of fruit and 3 cups of veggies a day. Eat at least 3 high-calcium foods or food sources a day.
Okay.
Use onions, garlic, and spices liberally.
Okay.
Keep fried foods to a minimum.
Yep.
And eat 2 to 3 servings of good fats a day.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You're very welcome. Next, we talk with a listener in Monticello on line 3. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm on a goal to lose about 60 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I've been doing it is I have like cereal in the morning with 2% milk and an apple with 2 tablespoons of peanut butter for lunch. And then an orange or salad or grapes, a combination of the two for dinner at night. And I've lost 30 pounds in about almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered what you thought of my diet. And
well, I think you've got a great base for your diet. One thing I would do, we've talked a lot about protein today, but one thing I would do is increase your protein.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because when you lose weight, what we want to do when we lose weight is we want to maintain muscle as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to fuel the muscle.
Uh-huh.
And we want to be able to lose body fat. And so, you know, something like your cereal and 2% milk in the morning, fine, good balance. We could even add a little protein again to that. You could add another glass of milk, or you could add, you know, an egg or something like that. Your lunch with an apple and 2 tablespoons of peanut butter probably isn't quite enough. But if you had that, maybe throw in a chicken breast or something to that. And then at night, that's a good time to get that fruit. That works great. But I probably, again, would add in, you know, at least a protein source to that, at least some lean sirloin or some fish or something to that effect to make sure that you're balancing out proteins at every meal. That's still going to be low calories. It still may not really be enough. Obviously, when you're trying to lose weight, we do want to drop those calories down, maybe 500 or 1,000 a day versus what you need to try to lose a pound or two.
I'm about 1,500 a day, probably.
Yeah. And so the other thing you could think about, if it works for you, if it's doable, even add in an extra 20 or 30 minutes of activity, and that will, you know, that'll burn another 200 or 300 calories a day,
yeah.
And that way you don't have to cut food down anymore.
Yeah, I'm very active.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm remodeling my house, things like that, watching my 2-year-old grandson. It keeps me pretty busy.
Yeah. Well, that's the only thing I would suggest maybe is increasing that protein a little bit. Just so you may find, you know, there's some indication that a little bit higher protein helps with weight loss as well. So if you can maintain that lean muscle while you lose it, you may find that, gosh, you do everything with a little bit more energy and you burn more calories, which would be great.
All right. I'll try to increase my protein then.
Okay.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work, though.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana on line 1. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about calcium. I'm in my late 60s, and I do a fair amount of exercise. I recently went to the doctor, and the nurse kind of wondered if I was taking 5 things of calcium a day. And I think I do. I also do about a half hour of weightlifting.
Mm-hmm.
And a fair amount of cardio work, which I think tends to maybe deplete calcium over time. I take calcium in the morning. I have yogurts and cottage cheese and things like that. But I wanted to get a sense from you as to the relationship between upper weight body strengthening and the amount of calcium one should absorb during the course of the day. Before and after exercise, I usually do mine in the late afternoon, early evening. But I want to get an idea whether the 5 portions of calcium intake were things that you would recommend.
Okay, good question. Well, first, let me back up a second. At your age, the calcium that you would need in terms of the servings, if you get in certainly 4 even, you know, being a cup of milk or a cup of yogurt or an ounce of cheese, so on, 4 to 5 a day would be fine. That should be plenty of calcium unless for some reason you're low. The exercise you're doing shouldn't deplete calcium. It shouldn't, you know, decrease the usage of calcium or anything like that. The only thing that, from what you're saying, that could be a factor, there are some people who are high calcium sweaters. It's not that common, but it does happen. Occasionally I'll have athletes who just sweat out a lot of calcium and we have to supplement because of that. And when I say a lot, you know, if you exercised an hour a day and maybe lost 300 or 400 milligrams of calcium, that'd be a lot. That'd be on the high level, but it's certainly possible. So some people, pardon?
I do tend to sweat a lot. I do about two hours of cardio a day.
Oh, okay. So, you know, with the level you're doing and if you're sweating a lot, then that may be how you could be losing more calcium. It's possible that you're losing more that way. But I would still say that if you have 5 servings a day, that would be equivalent to about 1,500 milligrams, which is a little bit more than the recommended amount for you. You know, we usually recommend around 1,200, so that should still be fine. And the one thing about the calcium is you want to just spread it out during the day. You don't necessarily need it before or after exercise or anything, but you just need it as spread out as possible. So that way we think the body absorbs it better if you have it in the morning, like it sounds like you do. You have it at lunch, maybe a snack, dinner, snack, something like that, so that those high calcium foods are spread out, and then the body tends to absorb those better.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. We've got maybe about 5 minutes left in this portion of the program with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. If you'd like to join us with a question, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, I went online this morning ahead of our talking this afternoon, and I found a tool that you helped develop, and listeners might find this useful as well. This is from RK Team Nutrition, and it's a nutrition assessment tool. And one of the things, the top number one thing, I guess you're starting at the beginning of the day, eat breakfast as soon as possible after I wake up. Why is that important? Why do you want to do it right away?
Yeah, well, a couple reasons. One reason is because you haven't had a chance to get any fuel in the system unless you're a night eater and up eating during the night, but hopefully not. So so basically your body's gone a long time without fuel. And so it is important to get that energy in as soon as you can. And if you feel queasy in the morning, if you don't feel like eating the first half an hour, hour, just eat when you feel like it. But the longer you go without eating, the more we know that you just don't have energy to do what you need to do. And we also know it does affect metabolism. So eating helps metabolism get going. It helps you start burning calories. It gives you energy. You feel better. Most people can do things with more fervor because they've got some fuel in the system, and it helps manage blood sugars and all those things. So eating breakfast, even though a lot of people say, gosh, I never do it and I'm not used to it, once they do start doing it, they generally feel better.
Feel better. Okay, let's take a call. Listener in Chicago, line 4. Hi.
I think I asked if you could look into a relation between zinc and copper the last time you were on air. Did you have a chance to do so?
You know, I did not get that
okay.
done, but I can still work on that.
Yeah, that was noticed by the nutrition and Louise Gittleman, I believe.
Okay.
And she has this book, Why Am I So Tired, pointing out copper overload is a major contributor to that and what you can do to adjust the amount of copper, you know, in relation to zinc and other foods that are beneficial. But I also wanted to comment about this matter of callers on your show concerned about their diet and health and big pot bellies and so forth. I came upon an interesting program that kept me up all night for about 3 hours. There's a person from Australia who wrote a book called the Gabriel Method, and he went from being a healthy young teenager to huge weight gains, like 2 or 3, up to 400 pounds, and this remarkable way of dealing with it other than simply calorie counting and other things. I mean, he had gone through the Pritikin diet program with the Pritikin people, and the Atkins diet with them, and so he had a remarkable story relating in a book called The Gabriel Method. If it comes across your way, I recommend looking at it. Thank you.
Okay, next we talk with a listener in Champaign, line 1. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
If I have a granddaughter who's age 20 and she keeps her hemoglobin up from 7 or 9, is it possible to bring this up with the use of iron-rich foods? And if so, which ones? Pumpkin seed? Whatever.
Yeah. Well, hemoglobin, we want that to be higher. We want that to be, you know, 12, 13, something like that. It might be possible with iron-rich foods, although generally when hemoglobin gets that low and when ferritin, another storage form of iron, gets that low, we supplement with iron to bring that up faster into a better level. And so usually typically what's done is iron is given 2 or 3 times a day when it's that low, as well as high iron foods. Certainly the best foods for iron absorption are the heme iron sources, which would be really, the bottom line is red meat. The best is liver or liverwurst or something like that, but also lean red meat, because that tends to be in the form, the heme form, which your body can take up and use better than, let's say, iron-fortified cereal or iron and spinach or anything like that that has the oxalates that bind, that stop the absorption. So in that level, generally, we often recommend the supplements first. There are, I will say, there are liquid iron supplements. Sometimes people don't want to take the solid iron, and there are liquid supplements or other supplements that are more sort of natural iron supplements that I've had athletes who really want to use instead of other forms. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different supplemental forms of iron if someone is not wanting to take a typical iron tablet.
But, are they less constipating?
Yeah.
Liquid form, yeah.
Right. The liquid form can be better, or there's a product called Slow Fee that is often recommended. That's a more slowly absorbed iron. And sometimes clients I work with have a better experience with that as well. Mm-hmm. But then we always try to combine that with vitamin C and combine that with high iron foods as well.
Okay. Are pumpkin seeds, raw pumpkin seeds, any good?
Yeah, they're a fairly good source of iron. Again, it's not as well absorbed since it's not an animal source of iron. But nuts and seeds in general are good. Peanut butter, things like that. Iron fortified cereals and things are still going to be good sources. You'll absorb some, but just not nearly as much as the heme sources.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And there we will leave it for our nutrition program in March.
Now everyone can enjoy National Nutrition Month all month long.
All month long. And if you want Susan's top 10 for optimal nutrition, the checklist that she shared with us this afternoon, you can drop us a line at the Afternoon Magazine at WILL Radio 310? 300. North Goodwin Avenue. 300. Boy, I don't know. I need to start out my day with a little bit more protein.
That's right.
300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Well, we will see you in April.
See you in April.
All right.
In spring.
Very good. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
It's 1:53. Standing by with settlement prices now from Chicago and Kansas City, Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste. Looking at those numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures were lower as the Dow Jones Industrial Average dipped as low as 6,800, or almost as low as 6,800 at one point today, although it's backing up just a bit, down around 181 points at this hour. Corn futures were lower. March contract was down 7.25. March in the beans were down 26 cents, and the nearby March contract in the wheat pit finished 15.75 of a cent lower, with a high price today of $5.16, the low at $4.92, settlement price there at $4.94 3/4. Soft red winter wheat March from Chicago 15.75 lower. May 5.29 on the high. The low at 5.02 3/4. Settlement price at $5.06, 15.5 lower. In July, 5.40 1/2 the high. The low at 14.75. Settlement price at $5.18, down 15.25. December corn, 5.85, or rather wheat, at 5.85 1/4 on the high. The low at 5.60 3/4. Settlement price at 5.63 1/2, 16.25 lower. Now the corn pit, 7.25 cents lower, 3.55 3/4 the high. Low at 3.37 1/4. Settlement price for the March corn at $3.43 1/2, 7.25 lower. May futures, 3.62 3/4 on the high. The low at 44.5. Settlement price at 3.50 1/4. Down 8.75 in July contract, 3.71 3/4 the high. Low at 3.54. Settlement price at $3.59 1/2, down 9 cents. September, 3.80 1/4 the high. The low at 3.63 1/4. Settlement price at 3.68 1/4. 9.5 lower. December futures, 3.93 1/4 the high. The low at 71.5. Settlement price at 3.80 1/4, down 10. And 3/4 for the afternoon. March oat futures, $1.76 the high, the low at $1.70. Low was $1.76, and the settlement price was $1.81 1/2, down 3 cents. We don't have a correct high for the March oats. May futures there, $1.91, down 3 for the day. March soy complex now, $8.74 for the beans on the top, the bottom at $8.43. Settlement price, lead option, March contract, $8.48 1/2, down 26 cents a bushel. May futures, $8.72 the high, low at 8.38 1/4. Settlement price at 8.44, down 28 cents. And July 8.74 on the high, the low at 41. Settled at 8.46 1/2, down 28 1/2. August contract, 8.59 1/2, the high, the low at 8.30. Settled 8.33 1/2, down 31 cents. And September soybeans, 8.30 1/2, the high, the low at 8.04 1/2. Settlement price at 8.07 1/2, 32 1/2 cents lower. November beans, 8.27 1/4, the high, the low at 7.88 1/2. Settlement price at 7.93, 34 1/2 cents lower. March bean meal, 274.80, the high, the low at 266.40. Settled at 267.80, down $8. In the May bean meal, 269.30, the high, the low at 259.50. Settlement price, $260.80, down $9. Soybean oil futures, 30.99, the high, the low at 29.85. Settled 30.10, 75 cents lower. May bean oil down 77 cents. 31.36, the high, the low at 30.10. Settlement price at 30.34. Maybe in oil, 77 cents lower. I'll return at 6 after the hour, just 9.5 minutes away now, when we'll talk during the closing mark report with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Livestock contracts also took a hit today in Chicago. April live cattle, the high today, 85.55, the low 83.80, the settlement 83.95, down 197.5. June, 83.60, the high 81.80, the low 82.20, the settlement, that down 170. August, 83.90, the high 82.20, the low 82.95, the settlement, that down 127.5. October, 87.65, the high 86 even, the low 86.70, the settlement, that down 152.5. March feeder cattle, 91.95, the high 90.90, the low 91.45, the settlement, that down 115. April, 92.95, the high 91.85, the low, the settlement, 92.35, that down 152.5. May feeder cattle, 95.20, the high 93.25, the low 94.07.5, the settlement, that down 142.5. August, 97.80, the high 96.20, the low 97.17.5, the settlement, that down 152.5. April lean hog, 61 even, the high 59.85, the low, the settlement, 60.27.5, down 62.5. May, 71.35, the high 69.85, the low 70.25, the settlement, that down 110. June, 72.70, the high 71.10, the low, the settlement 71.47.5, down 105. July, 74.25, the high 73 even, the low, the settlement 73.62.5, down 72.5. And March pork belly, 78 even, the high 76.50, the low, the settlement 76.50, down 120. The Dow is off 230, the NASDAQ is off 44, and the S&P 500 off 28. Nearby crude oil down 429 at 40.47 in New York at the Mercantile Exchange.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
It's 1 minute before 2 o'clock. You're tuned to WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Celeste Quinn. The producer for the program is Harriet Williamson. Mike Solis forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon in northern and central Illinois, a mix of clouds and sunshine with widely scattered flurries, elsewhere mostly sunny. Highs this afternoon ranging from 22 in northeastern Indiana to 37 in far southern Illinois. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy, lows ranging from 8 in northern Indiana to 20 in southwestern Illinois. The outlook for tomorrow, mostly sunny early, then becoming partly cloudy in northern Illinois during the afternoon.